Recorded on Friday, June 13th, 2025. I'm Breanne Doyle. Rabble.ca shares with you the news of the day through a progressive lens. If you're curious about what's happening in Canadian politics, labor, the environment, and beyond, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us. Thanks for tuning in. It's Pride Month, and while advocating for queer and trans rights is a year-round commitment, this June feels especially urgent. Countries once considered relatively safe, like the UK and the US, are rolling back protections and adopting increasingly hostile policies. And in many parts of the world, same-sex relationships are criminalized. People who defy gender norms face punishment, and simply living authentically can put someone's life at risk. An organization that works to protect queer and trans lives globally is Rainbow Railroad.
Rainbow Railroad is a global charitable organization that helps LGBTQI plus people facing persecution based on their sexual orientation, gender identity, or sex characteristics.
That's Devin Matthews, the head of programs at Rainbow Railroad. This week, Matthews joined Rabble to talk about the history of the organization and the work it does today.
Since our founding, we've been able to support around 20,000 LGBTQI people through different forms of support, not all through relocation, some through crisis response, cash assistance, and other forms of support. And last year, we received around 13,400 requests for help, and were able to support 5,886 people, relocating 302 people from 36 different countries.
As Matthews mentioned, the supports that Rainbow Railroad can offer a person in need vary case by case, and it all starts with an online application.
People fill out a request for help form where they detail the situation that they're dealing with and their unique situation as well in terms of their passport mobility, different areas that they're looking for support in. And from there, we basically triage, and we're triaging based on people's experiences of persecution, the severity of the experiences that they're having, as well as the viability of access to support that we can provide them. So there are some individuals based on their region or their circumstances that we can't move, but we can provide other avenues of support. And there are some, while they are very afraid and are experiencing a lot of anticipatory fear or anticipatory kind of circumstances, just because of our limited resources and the just volume of requests that we receive, we can't necessarily prioritize them immediately, given that we have to really triage effectively and carefully. From there, the people who are prioritized are kind of divided into different program areas. So we have a number of partnerships with government to do formal refugee resettlement. And then we also support people in making asylum claims through kind of more informal avenues of travel, as well as supporting people through different in-country programming, connecting with resources, connecting with the UNHCR, providing them cash assistance so that they can kind of get on their feet in a different region within their home country, all sorts of different programming.
There are currently an estimated 120 million displaced people around the world, the highest number since the end of the Second World War. And as Matthews explains, when any form of displacement occurs, queer and trans people are made especially vulnerable.
Every time a crisis flares up, even where it doesn't have anything to do with the queer or trans community, we see our requests for help increasing. And that's because obviously, queer and trans people are in every population affected by crisis, humanitarian disaster, war zones, environmental issues, but also they experience a particularly risky form of experience of that, of those crises. An example is when Afghanistan fell to the Taliban, Rainbow Railroad was very active in supporting queer and trans people who were involved in what was a nationwide, wide population risk crisis, but where queer and trans people were like particularly vulnerable to the threat of the Taliban at that moment. And so, you know, wherever these things are kind of occurring and where violence is flaring up, we are there to try to support the community in finding access to safety.
Rainbow Railroad operates globally, with especially high volumes of assistance requests coming from countries where queer and trans individuals face heightened risks, such as Afghanistan, Lebanon, Uganda, Egypt, Pakistan, Russia, and Turkey. One such asylum seeker was Rama Asulani.
Before coming to Canada, I was living in Turkey as a refugee, lesbian, non-binary. And before that, I was escaped from Morocco because I can't be myself. And I face so many violence, physically, psychologically, discrimination, persecution from my family, society. So I escaped to Turkey. But unfortunately, it was worse than I thought. Also, I have been face all different kinds of violence and discrimination and persecution. And worse than that, I was being arrested and imprisoned because of my sexual identity by the Turkish police. So I was living constant fear of being myself, fear of being show up, fear to go outside, fear to be deported to the place where I may not survive there, also for being imprisoned again.
Asulani wrote to Rainbow Railroad explaining their situation. After only one day, they got an email response.
This email changed everything. I remembered the words. It was, "We are here to help you. You are not alone."
Asulani's need to escape was urgent. They faced severe homophobia to the point where simply walking outside put them at risk of violent attacks and potential hospitalization.
In Morocco, I cannot be myself. I was so much suffering, facing discrimination, persecution, violence to go outside, to wear what I want to wear, to be as lesbian, queer, non-binary, to even to find a job. It was very hard for me. To go outside, it's very hard for me. Always that calling by assaulting from the society, from the people. Plus that, I was being forced to be married to a man, so that is the main reason why I escaped from Morocco to Turkey, because it was like the end for me. I cannot do that, so that's why I escaped. So when I went to Turkey, it was worse than I thought. Also the same thing and worse. I cannot be myself, finding discrimination everywhere outside the street, at work. I faced violence from homophobic devised me, and I was hospitalized in the hospital, and the police did nothing just because they stopped me in the streets, and are you a boy or girl? Start like that, and then they start beating me. So everywhere I contact, I tried to be myself, and at the end, I was hopeless. Almost I'm going just to give up. But always I was have this hope, just I have to fight. I cannot live no traditional culture or religion or community can stop me, because I want just to be myself. So at the end, my hope and my dream and something inside me, this is what makes me empower and give me energy that I cannot give up. And so Rainbow Road wish me up and were contacted with each other and they came to Canada.
As mentioned, Rainbow Railroad's work isn't limited to countries on the eastern side of the world. In fact, the organization has seen a rise in requests for assistance from within the United States, particularly following the re-election of Donald Trump.
The United States has been a country that we have supported many people to relocating into, especially during the course of the last administration. And with varied success, we had numerous government partnerships and different programs to support people at a community level as well. We've since seen the infrastructure of those pathways, specifically around refugee resettlement, crumble under the current administration's policies. And a general anti-LGBTQI and anti-refugee and immigrant sentiment within the administration, which we were anticipating, just perhaps not at the rate or the extent that we have seen. We worked through the last time that this administration was in office and did what we could to support people through. And there are people who still manage to find some form of relative safety for themselves in the United States, despite any administration. And where those people are in the U.S. without support or find them their way to the U.S., during this time, we're running a program called Communities of Care, where we're bringing community members in the United States together to help support asylees and refugees who are in the United States, kind of orient themselves to the position that they're in, their rights environment, and how to access critical services. And so, yes, we've seen huge shifts from January until now, some of which we were anticipating, some of which have come for various reasons as a bit of a surprise. But at the end of the day, we will always do what we can to support people both inside of the United States, but more importantly, globally, in finding other options, especially those who were bound for the United States as refugees, who we now have to find alternative options for.
Although informal asylum pathways often involve relocating individuals to European countries due to regional mobility and easier access to asylum systems, Rainbow Railroad's formal government resettlement efforts have historically focused on the United States and Canada. As Matthews notes, those efforts are now almost exclusively centered on Canada.
We have a long-lasting and really healthy relationship with the Canadian government that has stood the test of both the conservative and liberal leaderships that allows us to support LGBTQI refugees through various different programming. We have had the most success in the last number of years in working with Immigration Refugees and Citizenship Canada on what's called the government-assisted refugee pathway, which we fought long and hard for, and finally were able to achieve and are in our first full year of development of that program after piloting it last year. And folks really have a varied kind of range of experiences once they land in a country that they are resettling to. We really try not to paint things as a glossy pamphlet to individuals while they're attempting to flee or to resettle. Resettlement is an incredibly challenging, very taxing, very stressful process. And it's also a complete, shift for most people in terms of what they're able to do, how they're able to live their lives. And in some ways, that's beautiful and really affirming and abundant. And in some ways, that's very scary and scarce and becomes very challenging for people. And so we attempt to meet people where they are and believe that people's right to the full experience, the positive, the negative, and the neutral is all critical to the storytelling of what it means to be a refugee or asylum seeker.
For Rama Esulani, a participant in the government-assisted refugee program, coming to Canada has been a reclaiming of their dignity and freedom of expression.
It's totally different. The first time ever in my life, I feel that I am not surviving. I am possessed. I can't even smell the freedom. People respect me. I say I am non-binary. I am lesbian. People respect that. How it is peaceful. I can see the welcoming, the safety, and the also feeling with living also with dignity, that no one can say nothing wrong to me. And these things I was missing it from a long time. And now I am 32 years, so you can say it's 30 years. I never felt the same thing. So the first time I feel like that is something incredible. It's a rebirth again. And that's exactly what I was wishing and looking for.
The government-assisted refugee program is one that Rainbow Railroad has been advocating for a while.
We spent years and years advocating pretty doggedly for this pathway, making the argument that LGBTQI refugees are systemically alienated and often actively discriminated within the kind of predominant mainstream refugee system. We are witness to this. There are many other organizations witness to this, including in the coalition of organizations that we work with across Canada that represent queer and trans refugees and how they plan to settle in Canada. And we made this argument and really tried to help IRCC understand that it would be beneficial not only to their other partners who make referrals of refugees, but to the refugees themselves to be able to specifically cater the entire end-to-end process to them. So everything from intake conversations about their identity and their persecution to what they need while they're waiting for refugee resettlement, to the way that we write their stories and their histories and provide documentation. There's so many complex components of what goes into a refugee application, a refugee protection application, and the resettlement process itself that should be queer and trans tailored for queer and trans people, ideally by queer and trans people and advocates. And so we finally were successful in making that argument. We have been given a 250-person referral cap each year, which this year we will be hitting right on the head, if not blowing through and needing to find alternative options. In part, again, because we've had to pivot some individuals who were bound for the United States through this pathway, given the unfolding situation in the United States under the current administration. So the program is up and running full steam, and it's an incredibly necessary program for the people that we work with, especially given the number of requests for help that we're seeing increasing year over year.
This month, of course, marks Pride Month in Canada. For Esulani, this will be the first Pride Month they have been able to celebrate openly and in community.
I am very excited because finally I will celebrate the Pride and I will go outside and be myself and meet people and celebrate and scream. So it's something that is overwhelming, but in positive side. And because for me, it's kind of pick up for seeing I am here finally, and also to give hope also to the others. If you're the other LGBT community are still living in a dark, are still like facing persecution, violence, that they have to fight. So my celebration is kind of a win and also of resistance, and also that I am not going to give up and give hope to the others, and they are very happy for that.
This month also marks World Refugee Day on June 20th, and on that day, Rainbow Railroad will be releasing their annual report detailing the state of persecution against LGBTQIA+ individuals worldwide.
We always try to mark World Refugee Day on June 20th because of its importance and because of the importance of connecting LGBTQI persecution and the experiences of queer and trans refugees with such a momentous day such as World Refugee Day, and its roots being kind of absent of the queer and trans story and like how queer and trans people experience forced displacement and persecution. This is an area that's really understudied, under-discussed. There is not a sufficient amount of data to really understand the experiences of queer and trans people in displacement. And so we're trying to highlight it every year by kind of bringing to light the information that we have on the clients that come to us for support. So yeah, there's a number of very key statistics in this annual report that we will be launching, and it provides insights into trends regionally, how persecution is kind of unfolding, and how grassroots mobilizers and actors are looking for solidarity and what they're doing to kind of address the problem at the kind of on the ground level. It also kind of tracks really interesting trends that we see based on like breakdown of our individuals that come to us by age, by gender, by kind of like where they are in their journey, what they're asking us for, the types of persecution that they experience. And we attempt to work on this data every year and improve it so that there's also, a wider amount of information out there in the world that people can access around the state of LGBTQI persecution that can be used in program design, in academic settings, et cetera, because it is an absolutely critical component of understanding the state of the world today.
For listeners who'd like to become involved and support the work of Rainbow Railroad, Matthews would like to point people toward their current donation campaign.
We are running our Solidarity and Pride campaign right now, which is such a key part of our year. And it's a huge way for allies and folks who maybe have not been involved in this work before or are hearing about us for the first time to get involved. I'm sure that folks hear this from every nonprofit organization that exists, but we need people to come behind us with their donations. We are trying to raise $1.6 million by June 30th. It is key for us to hit this number. Otherwise, we won't be able to serve the people that deserve our support. So people can host a fundraiser if they don't actually want to donate or can't donate themselves, rally their communities and networks, share on Instagram, donate a portion of sales if they work for a company or in retail or something like that. Or donate proceeds from an event, especially if you're running a pride event for your employees or in the community. You can also sign up to volunteer. So in Canada, there's two different volunteer programs, one for privately sponsored refugees to support them in landing in Canada, as well as the Rainbow Housing Drive, which focuses on providing and supporting people with access to housing. You can subscribe to our newsletter, follow us on social media to keep up with what we're doing on a more events-based basis. And also there's infinite advocacy kind of moments for you to get involved, especially right now. You know, there's some pretty scary and concerning pieces of legislation that are kind of haunting us. And so, you know, contacting elected officials and demanding that they create more dedicated pathways and programs for LGBTQI refugees and invest in sustained partnerships with LGBTQI civil society and continue to support refugees and asylum seekers in country. Speaking out against state-sponsored homophobia and transphobia is a critical component, I believe, of what it means to be Canadian as well.
Once again, that was Devin Matthews, the head of programs at Rainbow Railroad, and Rama Esulani. For more information on the work Rainbow Railroad does, or for more information on how to support their work, visit rainbowrailroad.org. And now, this is our In Case You Missed It segment, where we review the top stories from this week on Rabble.ca. For that, let's go to Rabble editor Nick Seabrook. Over to you, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. Starting this week with national news. Activists and MPs from three of Canada's federal parties held a press conference in Parliament Hill, calling for an end to the genocide against the Palestinians and for support for the global march to Gaza. One of the activists speaking at the event was Dr. Yipeng Ge, an Ottawa-based physician and vocal critic of Israel's attack on the civilian population of Gaza. In an op-ed on Rabble, Dr. Ge explained why he was participating in the global march to Gaza, writing, quote, "In a few days, we will march collectively to the Rafah border crossing. I will be with thousands of other volunteers and activists from all over the world demanding that the thousands of aid trucks be let in, because this is what is needed to stop the famine and starvation," end quote. Despite the rising civilian death toll, the Canadian government is continuing to allow Canadian companies to sell weapons to Israel, with over $18 million being sold in 2024 alone. In Ontario news, students are warning that Ontario Premier Doug Ford's Bill 33 could drastically reduce student activism on university campuses. Bill 33 is the government's omnibus legislation to reform education from elementary schools right through to post-secondary. One of the provisions in the bill for universities and colleges would see enrollment in student unions as being optional. In an op-ed on Rabble, University of Ottawa student James Adair said that this change is aimed at depriving student unions of funding. Adair says that Doug Ford wants to defund student unions so that they are less able to take part in activism. Student unions have often been at the forefront of social movements, whether it be the fight against climate change, justice for Indigenous peoples, or calling for an end to violence in Gaza. In the summer of 2024, students at universities across North America occupied their campuses for weeks on end in a bid to force their institutions to stop supporting the Israeli government. Adair says that Bill 33 puts activism like this in jeopardy. In labor news, the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, UFCW, is partnering with activist group EcoJustice to sue Health Canada, who they say are failing to adequately monitor and protect farm employees from exposure to pesticides. The lawsuit is alleging that Health Canada is failing to enforce parts of the Pesticide Control Products Act, which require employers to inform their employees exactly what chemicals they are using to spray their crops and provide them with adequate protection. UFCW says that this inaction puts employees, especially those who are migrant workers, at risk. Migrant workers often are in situations where they cannot demand adequate information and protection from their employers at risk of being fired. A migrant worker can be fired by their employer for complaining about working conditions. And if that happens, not only do they lose their source of income, but they can also be deported from Canada. Staying with labor news, members of the Alberta Teachers Association voted overwhelmingly in favor of strike action this week. The 39,000 teachers that make up the union voted by a margin of 94.5% in favor of strike action if current negotiations with the province reached an impasse. The Alberta Teachers Association is currently negotiating for better wages for its members and better resources for students. According to Statistics Canada, Alberta spends an average of around $2,000 less per student than other provinces, one of the lowest in the country. While students are about to leave the classrooms for summer break, the recent vote allows the union to take strike action with 72 hours notice at any time within the next 120 days, which could mean a possible strike in September when students are getting ready to go back to school. Also this week, Rabble columnist Kathy Crow is asking why the federal government is not prioritizing housing as a nation-building project. The Prime Minister recently met with provincial premiers in Saskatoon to discuss nation-building projects. Most of these projects had to do with resource extraction, like building pipelines. Crow said that to meet the current housing emergency, the federal government should create a publicly owned organization dedicated to building homes. There are 2.6 million Canadians who are experiencing homelessness or have insufficient housing. Not only would building more homes help to solve the housing crisis, Crow says, but will also boost the national economy by helping 2.6 million Canadians become better workers by stabilizing their home life. Finally, next week, don't miss Off the Hill. On our political panel this month, guests examine the tensions between the federal government's push for pipeline development and its commitments to Indigenous peoples. While the throne speech pledged to advance reconciliation and respect free, prior, and informed consent, the push for more pipelines seems to contradict those promises. Can Canada expand pipelines while honoring Indigenous rights? And how do these plans interfere with Canada's climate commitments? Panelists this month include Ariel Deranger, Executive Director of Indigenous Climate Action, Clayton Thomas Mueller, author and activist, and Carl Nirenberg, Rabble's parliamentary reporter. Join us on June 18th, 2025 at 4:30 p.m. Pacific, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Find the link to register for this free event on rabble.ca. As always, you can read the full version of all the stories we talked about today on rabble.ca.
Thanks, Nick. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. Thank you to the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Finally, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.
Broadcasting on the internet and at 90.1 FM from high atop Burnaby Mountain, you're listening to CJSF 90.1.